Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is John Gainey, Executive Director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany, a nonprofit, nonpartisan, tax-exempt charitable organization that promotes open, accountable New York State government with an interest in government transparency and public participation. In New York City, John led the campaign for the New York City Open Data Law, the first of its kind in the world. Previously, John was a consultant for U.S. and international environmental and urban development groups and was the longtime executive director of Transportation Alternatives. John Gainey, welcome back to the Capital Connection.
Thank you for having me.
Well, John, take a few seconds to remind us all what Reinvent Albany is.
Sure. Reinvent Albany was founded in 2010 by a group of people, mainly from New York City, who felt that state government was dysfunctional and was serving as more of a burden than a boon for the public, and that we felt that there were basic reforms that needed to be done, and wanted to help the groups of reformers that were already around on the scene with that. And if people remember all the way back to 2010, this was right when there was the famous Democratic Party coup in the state Senate. And shortly after we had Spitzer resigning in a sex scandal. So it was all highly dysfunctional and not fun. And we wanted to make some progress, which we have.
Can you remind us all a little bit about this Democratic Party coup and what it was and what happened as a result?
Sure. Back in 2010 or so, a handful of the Democrats had the majority in the state Senate, and except there was a breakaway faction of Democrats that went and voted with the Republicans, giving the Republicans a functional majority and actually thwarting Andrea Stewart Cousins from becoming leader of the Senate for a decade. And that coup, as it were, meant that you had the Republicans in control of the state Senate, and often in collaboration with Governor Cuomo, who was around during that whole period. So now New York has a Democratic supermajority in both the state Senate and the state Assembly, and the politics have changed a bit.
So, John, if you were taking a look at the way in which Albany government is now being conducted compared to the way it was years ago, has anything changed for the better?
Yeah, for sure. Some things are better, especially when it comes to voting and more access to the ballot. And that's important to our group. We are big supporters of robust voting rights and reduced barriers to voting. And that's certainly improved a great, great deal in just a handful of years, thanks mainly to some Senate Democrats. Senator Zellner Myrie, in particular, has been a great champion there on voting rights. So we're glad to see that. Other things that have changed very much to the good is that the state now has a public matching program for elections in which tax dollars go to match campaign contributions. And we think that's a big step forward and fought hard for that. And that's now in place for the first time. And we hope that that's going to create a dynamic for better oversight of campaign finance as it has in New York City. And so, you know, one of the here and now things we're looking for is full funding for that state public matching program, which we have high hopes for, particularly as it affects legislative races. So there's some, you know, shoots of green and growth there that we feel good about. And there's lots of dysfunction that we complain about.
Now, you know, you use the appellation reinvent Albany. How much reinvention does it need? I mean, I've been around for a long, long time, and I have watched an awful lot of would-be leaders doing what my mother would talk about, taking advantage. And it has not been a pleasant experience to see what New York State government had been and has become.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you know, this is before any of us were alive, but, well, most of us, but, you know, for a while in the, I would say 20s and 30s, New York State government was considered the best in the United States and led in all kinds of areas of new governance, including optimistically creating public authorities and trying to use them to get more things done in the public interest. And there was the progressive movement centered in New York. And we, of course, FDR came from New York. So lots of leadership by New York. And in, you know, the last decades or so, New York has become more synonymous with bad governance and dysfunction and corruption and waste than it has with being a leader. And so it is a struggle. But the good news is that there are lots of people in state government who do want to change things. And change is grueling. Democracy is a total mess, as we know. But we think that the state can come around. And again, just looking back to the last couple of years where, you know, if you wanted to, you could say, look at how terrible New York is. You know, look at your governors, you know, how many have resigned in these scandals. But on the other hand, New York's gone from almost last in terms of voting rights to one of the best in like 3 years. So 2 years. So that shows you that things can change rapidly in the right direction when you have the motivation, the spirit to do that. But again, you know, we're not Pollyannish. You know, we're often cited in the press as critics of how things work, of the status quo and of government dysfunction. But you could say that criticism is born out of optimism that things can change.
Well, change is often, you know, associated with individuals. I've had conversations, for example, with Andrew Cuomo lately. How much does a particular individual's leadership count in making these changes you'd like to see?
A ton. I mean, there's, you know, there's societal forces, there's institutional forces that take long amounts of time to create and then are fairly fragile to sustain. And then there's individual leaders. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned former Governor Cuomo, who is incredibly savvy, gifted politician and schemer and maneuverer, and could have done truly great things for the state of New York had he put his mind to that instead of getting embroiled in not so great things.
The word you used just now, which really attracted my immediate attention, was schemer. What do you mean by that?
The governor, or former Governor Cuomo, relished punishing opponents and all the ego games of having power and making his critics and opponents feel that power. And he was relentless in its application and seemed to often enjoy that game, that contest, more than actual getting things done and governance. And you can look at the never ending feud with the hapless de Blasio, mayor of New York City, for a prime example of that, where You had Cuomo bullying, essentially, the mayor, and our group would say, to the detriment of the people of New York City.
Then why did he do it? In other words, what motivates a guy like Andrew Cuomo to take such an offensive position?
I mean, what motivates anyone to think that they should be governor or president or has the ability that's superior to, you know, all other people to be in that role? I mean, to have a robust ego. And, you know, part of the way they express that is through their work and their office and the exercise of that power. So, you know, I think that Cuomo's public record is pretty clear. And he relished using power, including in a personal way.
He certainly did. How would you compare Cuomo number two with Cuomo number one?
I was a younger person during Cuomo one, so I couldn't really get up and make a reasonable comparison. And given how many things that governors don't control that buffet, you know, their regimes, things like the national economy and wars and, you know, recessions and et cetera, it is hard to compare them. But the younger Cuomo is, you know, considered to be more decisive, I think, by most analysts that we look to.
We are talking to John Caney, who is executive director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany, a nonprofit, nonpartisan, tax-exempt charitable organization. How much do we need your group?
How much do we need our group?
Yes.
We need Reinvent Albany times 1,000, but not just our group. It needs to be many, many more people. The state of New York has serious, serious problems, and they're structural, including real issues with lots and lots of people leaving upstate, and that's just happening and continues to happen. The state has a very, very high tax burden compared to the services it delivers. So that, you know, we're spending roughly $200 billion a year at the state level now and delivering transit service and social services that are lacking for New York. And as, you know, our group would feel it is, we have, you know, Western European style taxes without Western European style services. Or and so New York spends a ton. New York's Medicaid system is incredibly expensive and the poster child for ridiculously overly hospitalized, expensive end of life care. And we have incredible issues with poverty that are essentially not dealt with despite spending humongous, humongous amounts of money. So if you're someone who thinks it's good to dump huge amounts of money into producing fairly crummy public services, then, you know, God bless, but we're not. And that's what, so we would like, so, you know, should it be Reinvent Albany doing everything? Hell no. I mean, it takes a ton of people, but we think New York State has awesome, awesome potential and dynamism and is pretty terrible governance overall in terms of pouring money into the machine and getting good services out of the bottom.
Well, John Caney, one of the things that is interesting to me is government transparency. How does New York, you know, shape up compared to other governments, other state governments? Is New York really something that is so non-transparent that we have to put this emphasis on it?
Yeah, we wish we didn't have to spend so much time on basic transparency, especially in the internet age where you can just put so much online. But the sad reality is that New York's pretty secretive and opaque. And our budget process in particular, as you well know and many people gripe about, is often mysterious. And you have billions of dollars spent on things and legislators voting at the last second on things they don't know about. And we have the entire big ugly process of legislating and budgeting in which it's very leadership oriented and there's not a lot of robust public hearings so people know what's going on. Plus, on a, you know, when we use the word transparency, it's often equated with freedom of information law, which is just a part of transparency. But New York's freedom of information system is totally broken. It's overwhelmed with massive amounts of requests and government from local county clerks all the way up to, you know, big state public authorities are grossly underfunded to deal with the public freedom of information requests. And on top of it, officials often, you know, deliberately do not want to reveal things because they're embarrassing. So New York is terrible compared to the federal government when it comes to transparency. The federal government, which is fun to criticize, is way more transparent. And if we followed their basic rules on everything from campaign finance disclosure to budgeting to how they do freedom of information requests, New York would be a lot more transparent. So compared to other states, New York's probably not the worst, because states in the U.S. right now are having a crisis. There's kind of a generational crisis. It's been almost 50 years since freedom of information law spread across the United States, and it's broken everywhere, but it's particularly broken here.
Are you finding in your job that there are government agencies and others who really don't want to give you the information you need to do it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's agencies that are notorious and absolutely atrocious and go out of their way to thwart the public from getting things. And they do everything from drag their feet to, instead of just sending a digital copy of a, let's say, a huge spreadsheet of data, they'll literally take pictures and send it as an image file so that you can't use it in, you know, a spreadsheet, and therefore it's pretty useless. And the gap between the better agencies and the worst agencies is humongous. I mean, there's many state and local agencies that simply do not respond to freedom of information requests, and they basically dare you to sue them. So, yeah, it's a huge problem, and it gums up the basic work of accountability and democracy. So that it's interesting, because the public sometimes hears us on the media and thinks we're a state agency. And so we get complaints that say things like, "Dear Reinvent Albany, please fix this or that or the other thing." And many, many complaints from people about county clerks and not being able to get information, or why isn't this online and all of this stuff. And of course, we're not a government agency, but it gives us a glimpse into some of the issues that the public is dealing with.
How corrupt is state government?
It depends on how you define corruption.
How do you define it? And do you think when you hear that, yeah, that's why my organization exists? You know, things are not good.
We think that legal corruption, that is money being spent to influence politicians, elected officials, leaders in New York, is totally out of control. So do we think that, the governor or the legislative leaders are sticking bricks of $100 bills in their freezers or something? No. But do we think that there are example after example of shocking things, like the governor was criticized a lot for taking, you know, close to $1 million in contributions from people who were selling the state $637 million of home COVID tests. Indeed. At a price that was twice what California paid. There's plenty of examples of what looks like pay to play that is influencing government and government officials with contributions, often in the form of campaign contributions, to make us feel that New York's got real serious problems, and we would call that corruption. Additionally, the federal government, which used to be kind of the sheriff, as it were, of the Wild West of New York politics, has really, really shrunk into itself. And you don't see robust federal enforcement of anti-corruption laws. Plus, the Supreme Court, through a couple of major decisions, has made it much harder for the feds to enforce corruption.
So how do we fix it is the question. We have you on the show. We know that your heart is in the right place. We know that your organization is trying to do good things to reform. Nevertheless, there's got to be a roadmap. And what's on the top of your roadmap list?
Yeah, I would say that there's a couple things. I mean, I noted that, I mean, we think it's a big deal to have a public matching system for elections, because it steers elected officials more towards small donors instead of just big donors. And New York's one of the good news stories is that it seems like the setup, the implementation of the state's public campaign matching system is actually going better than expected. And that's heartening.
Could you explain how that works?
Sure. It means that for every dollar that a person contributes to an elected official, that dollar is matched either 6 to 1 or even 8 to 1 with tax dollars. So if you give $10, it's worth 10 times 6, $60 plus your original 10 contribution, so $70. So for $10, you're making a $70 contribution. And that means that people who aren't as well off have more power to fund or, you know, buy the attention of elected officials. And it also means that there's way more scrutiny of the campaign finance system by government because public funds are at risk. And what we've seen in New York City over time is that sensitivity of the public towards public tax dollars being put at risk, as it were, means much, much more scrutiny overall of campaign finance spending. So that's one of the ways to get at pay-to-play culture and pay-to-play. That's good. Another is through more independent bodies being created. The governor missed a huge opportunity to create a truly independent ethics commission.
Why do you think she did that?
Why did she miss the opportunity?
Yeah.
Well, I think the idea of a truly independent ethics commission terrified the leaders and much of the legislature. And at the end of the day, the governor did not want to spend the political juice necessary to pummel the legislature into accepting it. And that she herself may have had mixed feelings about it. Because a truly independent, and this is an area where there's actually been some progress in the United States in thinking about things, it is possible to have appointment methods so that you can get people who are independent of the appointing authorities. And you can do it through panels of, you know, eligible candidates. You can do all kinds of things to create some distance between a ethics commission and state political leaders. This can be done. The governor took a shot at it with law school deans, which actually we think worked better than we had hoped. So independent enforcement, we think, is really, really important to changing things. An example being the comptroller, right? The comptroller just blew the whistle on this $11 billion on insurance fraud issue and state overpayment, which we think is going to be humongous in the year ahead because it's just such a huge amount of money. And the reason the comptroller could do that is because the comptroller is independent of the legislature or the governor. So one of the things we try to do is bolster the power of independent entities like the comptroller's office. So we fought hard to get the comptroller's office what are called pre-audit contract review powers restored, which we actually just did in the last legislative session after a 10-year fight. So this is grueling stuff. It took 10 years to restore the comptroller's contract review powers after it was taken away by Andrew Cuomo in the 2010-2011 budget.
How optimistic are you that we can make some real progress here? You know, you come up with a lot of good ideas, some of which have been implemented, of course. But we've been doing this program for many years, and inevitably, people look down their nose on the way in which state government operates. Do you have any high hopes?
You know, I'd say my hopes are measured hopes, and it's more along the lines of, you know, we've only got one Earth, we've only got one New York State, we only got one New York State government, and there aren't many options. We have to make it work better, and I would make an argument that now more than ever we need the state government to work because there's cataclysmic societal pressures looming. You know, there's climate change and huge changes to weather and human migration patterns that we're seeing now that are going to put a lot of stress on the state government and local governments, and it has to work or we're in big, big trouble. So I think it's more a question of we have to succeed or we're doomed.
Well, you know, I've been doing this program for a lot of years, and I've been hearing that. The real question is, what does corruption come from? Does it come from individuals who say, I want to make out like a bandit, or is it just a matter of dysfunction?
I think corruption in the kind that we have in New York now is actually, it's a takes a village corruption. It means that here there's a consensus, and you often hear businesses and union leaders say things like, there's mouths to feed, I've got mouths to feed, meaning that the end justifies the means, and that it's, you know, that they can are morally authorized, therefore, to do whatever it takes to get, you know, their agenda passed. And that attitude of end justifies the mean has resulted in a corrupt culture in Albany. Because you don't have, you know, the village establishing norms of behavior. Basically, the powers that be, the most powerful stakeholders in New York, are the problem. And that includes, you know, all the power, you know, and that therein is the problem, is that you have to get the most powerful unions and the powerful businesses and the hospitals and the business labor combines to start understanding that over time they lose from corruption. because it creates, what corruption does is it destroys accountability, and you destroy accountability and you get very, very high costs of providing government services. And that's what we have in New York, extremely expensive government for not great services.
We're talking to John Ganey, executive director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany, a nonprofit, nonpartisan, tax-exempt charitable organization that promotes open, accountable New York State government with an interest in government transparency. Okay, so John, when you take a look at everything that's being done in terms of reforming government, are we getting ahead of the game or are we falling further back?
Probably falling further back right now in the United States as a whole, because of Supreme Court decisions like the Citizens United decision, which, you know, we have seconds here. But the fact that money has been legalized or equated to speech constitutionally is a big problem here. And the U.S. political system is so awash in money right now that corruption is just absolutely inevitable. And that's a problem in New York, but everywhere else, too.
Well, you've been a terrific guest. We're out of time. Our guest has been John Ganey, executive director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany. To find out more, head to reinventalbany.org. John, again, as always, thanks so much for being with us. You're doing good work. Don't let the bums get you down. That's the important message.
Okay. Appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org or just schedule a podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. Thanks for listening.